This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Let's go there.
With Shira and Ryan.
Oh, entertainment.
Music. Pop culture.
LGBT plus news. Let's go there.
Starts now.
Hello. It's Tuesday,
Hi.
But yet it feels like a Thursday. This week, it already feels like we packed a lot in.
Wow, you're so loud.
I am loud.
Such a headache. I need to turn
Why
it
do
down.
You have a headache?
I don't know.
Are you
I'm
hungover?
I'm like dying. I feel like literally like death.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I do.
Wow. You,
but
see,
it's okay.
Ryan is the
I'll
type that will feel like death and yet he's like
happened.
Alive.
It literally just
like,
happened.
Like you wouldn't
know.
Like if I felt like death, you would see me and you'd be like, Shira, you
Shira,
look like
you
crap.
Would, you would have been on the ground. You would have been on the ground.
I mean, yeah.
But it's okay. We're going to push through because we got a great show going on.
Yeah.
And I know you had a date that you were telling me about a little
see,
bit. I was listening,
thing.
But I wasn't listening. So I
oh,
don't know why
I get
you were
it.
Saying.
Now I see why.
Yeah.
Because you weren't feeling well. It's not
yeah,
because
yeah.
you weren't interested in my story.
I kind of wasn't either. But continue. Tell me.
Well, in the continued adventures of single life.
Okay.
Which
is always
out...
something with you.
Well, it's funny because some people ask me like, oh, do you find it hard to meet people? It feels like a consistent conversation. All of us have because some people are on apps and other people
I just feel
aren't.
Like, is that another way of saying, do I have standards?
Huh?
And that's no shade, but it's like,
no.
Because you do meet a lot of people,
but also,
what are the standards? Like, I just feel like it's not, it can be difficult because people just have like certain standards.
No,
of meeting
there's
people.
Also people that say they literally don't have even an opportunity to meet anyone.
I don't know.
That's what I think.
Honestly, I feel like if a tree had, like, no. if it grew arms and it could hug you and start touching on you and feeling on you and gave you like a cute flirty moment, you would fall in love. I just think you like
in that
you
movie,
like
the tree. What's that tree in that movie?
It's the idea of just liking attention.
What's that cute little tree that's in that movie?
I don't know if there's a cute little tree. I've
yes,
never seen that
in the
film.
Movie with Chris Pratt.
Never seen. Oh, Groot.
Groot.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, if there was a Groot that wanted to date me.
First of all,
me,
we don't know Groot's sexuality, so we're not going to put that on him.
Exactly, I'm open. And that would be exclusive, the first time a woman dating a tree. So,
but yeah, I think it is very easy for you to find a guy to connect with, but yeah, I do wonder sometimes. I'm like, does she actually like this guy?
Well, it's all about testing out the waters. You need to date a lot, including if you haven't been in the arena for over 10 years. It's about...
I don't think you can say that anymore.
Yes, I can.
I just feel like there's... Okay.
If you haven't been in the arena, in the dating world, for a long time, part of figuring out what you like and don't like is by going out with people. All right? I want to talk to you when you're in your late 30s and you're at the edge of possibly needing to have a child and see what you have to say about it.
Well, it's going to be easy for me. I'm not going to have to carry a child in my uterus or anything.
Maybe at that point you'll be able to. We're talking about 10 years from now.
Yeah, modern
technology.
Science.
Okay. I didn't tell my story.
That's
but
good. See,
I
think we said enough. We said everything.
It was a good story.
We just talked about my robo-uterus.
Listen, stay tuned. Stay tuned for tomorrow. I will be letting you in on a dating
you
story.
You don't have to, Sherry.
Yes,
really
you got
to
tease it.
Okay, maybe.
The people want to know. Okay. But let's
do
get
they?
Into someone's trending in the news right now. Let's do a poll. You're into polls.
I do like polls.
Yeah.
I love a good poll.
All right. Some news coming out of Puerto Rico. Ricky Martin is speaking out against efforts by Puerto Rican politicians to eliminate legal protections for queer people. Puerto Rico's Senate is currently considering amendments to the civil code that would prevent citizens from updating their legal gender markers. It would also weaken non-discrimination laws and limit access to reproductive health services. The changes have actually already passed the House of Representatives and the Senate could vote this week. This is what Ricky Martin tweeted last week. We must keep in mind the Senate's motives to amend the civil code. Lawmakers are obsessed with provoking a setback in the fight for equality for the LGBTQ community. Last year, a federal judge ruled that the Commonwealth's former policy, which actually prevented citizens from correcting birth certificates, was unconstitutional. But now the proposed bill would restore the ban on correcting gender markers. And we all know how much Ricky Martin did recently in Puerto Rico. One of the people that stepped down, not the president of Puerto Rico, is the president, even the government. He bringing down the government.
Everyone was rioting.
Has the same president as us.
Right? I don't forget that. Donald Trump went down there and threw tissues at them.
Yep.
He was terrible.
So he took down the government before. So it seems like if Ricky Martin sets out to do something, he could hopefully push for the right thing to be done in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, Ricky Martin's great.
Wow. You seem so old.
Riveting. No, he is. He actually does a lot of work when it comes to activism, and he shows up for, you know, his country. He never forgets where he comes from, and I think, not country, but, you know, where he comes from, and I think that's a very beautiful thing, because celebrities often become these huge profile, and they often forget where they've come from, and sometimes they forget, like, oh, there's people outside of my world that I need to help and use my platform
for. Oh, yeah, he's definitely
doing Ricky Martin is that, and he has a beautiful family.
Oh, yeah. Goals. Yeah. I had the biggest crush on him when I was younger. Now let's move on to this anonymous book that has come out. We're going to be talking about that actually on What's Trending in the News in the next hour, because we bring you Trending in the News every hour right here on Let's Go There. But coming up, the existence of Obama's DACA program is in the hands of the Supreme Court right now, and what will become a historic decision to let Trump terminate the program. So what will happen to the nearly 800,000 young immigrants who live and work in the United States under the program if it ends? We're going to be getting into that after this on What's Trending in the News.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Now, the Supreme Court will decide soon if it will side with President Trump and end the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, also known as DACA. And just some context, because there still might be some people that hear DACA but be like, what does it actually do? The program was launched by former President Obama. It allows individuals who are brought to the country as children illegally to receive this renewable two-year period of deferred action from deportation and become eligible for a work permit in the U.S. Now we have Christian Ramos back with us, who is Communications Director for Define American. He's been on the ground today as oral arguments were heard by the judges. There are also many protests happening simultaneously around the country. Christian, thank you so much for joining us. I know it's been a busy day for you.
It has been a long and crazy day. So, yes. A good day.
Is it a good day? Because we're hearing many different things in the news.
Well, here's what I'll tell you is good. I've gone to many protests in front of the Supreme Court. I've gone to many activations. And what was heartening to see was that there were so many people from so many different walks of life out front in front of the Supreme Court. And what was especially amazing was that they had to shut down the street in front of the Supreme Court because there were so many people there. Wow. To show love for their fellow Americans, for those folks who are here, who are American in every way but their name. That was an incredible thing to see. You don't often see people from different faiths, from different ethnicities, from different social economic classes, all coming out to say, you know what, this matters to us, this is important, and fighting for that. So that was an incredible thing to see.
But beyond that, which is very inspiring, there are some realities to this situation. I mean, if you look in the news, and this is why you're here kind of to debunk this, and it's what you guys do at Define American, it seems like Chief Justice John G. Roberts Jr., his vote seems to be the deciding one. And it seems like he's siding with the program being legally questionable. So what's questionable about it? And does that mean that they're going to end it?
Well, okay. So it's important to just sort of provide context about what was actually occurring at the hearing today. There were two questions that were being asked. One, does the Supreme Court even want to take up this question around the legality issue? The other piece, and I think this is important for your folks at home to hear and understand, is whether the question before the court is not the legality of DACA, but the legality of the way in which the administration tried to get rid of DACA, tried to end the program. And so what that could mean in the future is that they eventually rule on the legality of DACA. But today, all they're trying to figure out is, was the way that the administration went about trying to end the program legal? And so, I'll just leave it there.
Yeah, so three lower courts actually held that the Trump administration failed to adequately explain its decision to end DACA. So basically, you know, if the Trump administration, you know, loses this case, could DACA still be in trouble? Because, you know, a lot of outlets are saying that, you know, all the Trump administration has to do is, like, write a memo. Is it as simple as that?
There are a lot of different ways that this could go. I will say that we're not going to hear about this one way or the other until now and March.
Okay.
So ultimately, the court will render its verdict, and then another set of lawsuits and everything else will ensue. My sense is that this will be tied up in the courts for the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
And as long as it's tied up in the courts, the program can continue to exist.
Well, I mean, okay. It seems like the Supreme Court is pretty split. I mean, the Supreme Court is mostly very Republican-led. And so I think that often has to do with why it is split, especially when it comes to this. But, you know, DACA recipients have been some of the top people that we've seen. I mean, a lot of them have gone to top universities, have even some appeared in Hollywood movies. It seems like, you know, what's going on to these people that have lived here their entire lives and have actually, you know, used this program and done some amazing things with their lives with it. It just seems very troublesome that they can just lose it at a drop of a hat.
So I'll put it another way. I think that's absolutely correct. But I think what you're getting at here, I think it's important, is America is at its best when it keeps its promises.
Yeah.
Wow.
Our country is at its best when we acknowledge the bonds that exists between our people and the promises that we make to those people. And all of the people who would be affected by this are obeying the law, have come out of the shadows and are within the purview of the government. And what I mean by that is they volunteered to let the government know where they are because they believe in the law. Now, we as a country have a question. Is that something that we're okay with, to just say, okay, one minute you have this thing and now we're going to take it away and we're going to break this promise that we made to you? Is that really what anybody considers a good thing for America?
Yeah.
And I think that's the other side of this, because this doesn't just affect those people who have DACA. This affects everybody. We brought somebody today to the Supreme Court who is a college professor and in Nebraska, in a red state. If he loses DACA, who's going to teach his classes? If he loses DACA, who's going to be the faculty advisor for all the clubs on campus that he works for? Who's going to be the role model for all of these students?
Yeah, it's a domino effect.
And I wanted to, because we're talking about, obviously, there. You said that there are no bad people in DACA, but it seems like Donald Trump is trying to create this narrative that there are hardened criminals, but then he tweeted about promising to cut a deal with Democrats if the high court ends the program. Can you explain what would happen in that way in terms of how Donald Trump's explaining it, and why does he keep referencing these hardened criminals in DACA?
So I think this is a great question, and let's unpack a little bit of what you said, because there are good people and there are bad people. There are people who have DACA, right? Nobody is good or nobody's bad. They're just human beings, and they're here and they're working, and as far as I'm concerned, they're American in every way but their status. And so, you know, that's the reality. The president is putting forward his narrative of events, which I tend to disagree with wholeheartedly, but I want to keep this on the focus on the people, right? By and large, these are people who are here, who came out of the shadows looking for legality, looking to be a part of our society in a more robust way, and we let them do that, and we should continue to let them do that. These are human beings. These are not, you know, narratives for the right-wing media to demonize. They have lives. And
yeah.
So I think it's dangerous when we look at these at DACA recipients in sort of this binary sort of way. They have flaws. They make mistakes. They do dumb things like anybody would. But that's within their rights as human beings, as Americans, and you know, we should embrace that.
All right. Well, Christian Ramos, thank you again for being here, considering how busy your day was, and continuing doing great work. Christian is a communications director from Define American. Definitely follow what they do everywhere on social media at Define American. They do great work. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. All right. We are moving into top stories in pop culture and entertainment news, shifting things with What's the Tea.
Okay, Shira, I have a quick question for you.
What?
So if a guy that you're dating doesn't touch you for if y'all don't have sex for a minute, do you feel like that automatically makes him gay?
No. I mean,
there's a struggle there. Well, we're going to get into that because Toni Braxton's sister she had a public service announcement about men who don't touch her. That makes them gay. Well, she's apologizing for her anti-gay remarks. Find out the full statement coming up next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
So we are back with What's the Tea, our entertainment pop culture stories of the day. And we all know who Toni Braxton is, right? Singer, legend, all that good stuff.
Yeah, hopefully people know.
If you don't, I don't know why you're listening. Shira, I'm kind of convinced that you may not know.
No, I feel like I listened to Toni Braxton when I was younger.
Y'all around the same age.
No, we're not.
Toni Braxton is not that old.
Really?
Oh. I mean, actually, she's way older than you.
Okay.
Like, not that old.
Anyway.
She just probably hit 50.
So what's the story?
Either way, I can't believe you. I couldn't decide. No, but either way, she has a sister. Her name is Tamar Braxton. She's also, we got familiar with her on their reality show, their family reality show. And Tamar is her own little star and very outspoken and loud and all the things that you would probably think of me, but she is. Well, okay. Tamar... has recently been called out for posting a self-described public service announcement to her Instagram in which she branded men who don't have frequent sex with their female partners as gay. Here's what she said. The truth is, lady, that these dudes out here really be gay. It ain't enough money, beauty, hair, babies in the world to keep them. They want penis, period. It's nothing wrong with you, but they will find every reason in the world to make you not good enough. If he lays with you for 3, 4, 10 days and he doesn't touch you, it's not you. He wants a man, and that's on my mama. So,
what inspired her to post that?
Here's the thing. No one knows what inspired her to post. It was so random, and for her to kind of self-describe it as a public service announcement, I was like, is this something that actual, you know, cis hetero women think about?
Well,
I
think you're
I'm asking
for a
you.
Reason. Well, no, I actually. I didn't really think about it. I think that society creates this, just like because of people like her, this idea that if you're with someone that might showcase some characteristics and you don't happen to have sex a lot, then they are assuming that they're in the closet. And I've experienced that.
Oh, so, but have you ever felt that way?
And because I didn't originally feel that way.
She over here, Dan, honey, she over here.
No,
she over here doing the Soul Train lineup on this question.
After enough people saying that to me about my ex, then I started to believe it.
Ooh.
And recently I called him. He doesn't live here.
Save that story. Okay. We got to go on a quick break. We will be right back to finish this conversation, honey. What's the tea? It's getting juicy. We spilling.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
All right, honey, we are back with What's the Tea, our entertainment pop culture stories of the day. And before we went to break, we were discussing Tamar Braxton and how she basically posted this post out of nowhere saying that men who don't want to have frequent sex with their female partners are gay AF. And before we left, you know, Shira was telling us how society makes you shape these things. And also she was
it
about
is.
To tell us
it's
a
true.
Story about how she thought her last boyfriend was gay.
No, because of society. At any rate, basically, he lives in another country now. We were in a place in our relationship where we weren't having sex a lot. Many factors to that. But because of what he does and kind of what he looks like, he got pigeonholed into that space of people questioning if he was straight.
People have said he looked like a lesbian.
Or that he was just like, oh, are you sure he's not gay? Is he in the closet? Which is totally not right.
Especially off of appearances and all these things. It just fuels everything.
So because of that, it's like, it starts to get in the back of your mind. Yeah. So you kind of look out for little things here and there, even though I don't care. And also, he can be whatever he wants. But he's in another country, so I was FaceTiming him, and he didn't answer. And he said he was in a sauna and, like, naked or whatever, and there was another person there. So I said, a guy or a girl.
Which, they are not dating, by the way, anymore.
Okay.
So that's why I was
We're
like, when Shira was telling me this.
Friends want to know where their friends are.
No.
You know, I would question you in the same way.
You would not. You would be like, all right, have fun.
Watch next time you do that to me. I'm going to be like stalking you. Anyway, so he said, oh, it's a boy and he's downstairs. I go, oh, so are you guys in the sauna together? Like, or what's going on? Why don't you FaceTime me? Why aren't you answering then if he's downstairs? And he's like, oh, because now I have my robe on. I was like, this story doesn't make sense. And then basically I continue to basically say to him, listen, whatever you are, whoever you are, I support you.
You started pressuring him to come out.
I said, I love you for who you are. You know, this is a safe space. You can trust me. And then he said to me, he's like, Shira, I'm not gay. And then I called you and I go, or I texted you, is this, what do you think about this text chain? And you're like, did you just try to out your boyfriend? Your
she
ex,
tried to coerce an out.
So
like,
anyway, so that goes back to this idea, because of all these things we think a guy should be doing. Like, you should always want to nail your girlfriend. Yeah. You should always want to hook up with people. If, like, you don't have those characteristics, it means automatically you're gay, which is wrong.
Yeah, it's just so, it's wild how, you know, that does kind of force the stigma of, you know, gay and closeted men and kind of taking out their own insecurities. And she, you know, Tamar, going back to the story, Tamar actually had to apologize. She said, I shouldn't have been in my feelings and ranted on social media based off of a conversation that I had with my friends. I was talking about me, but not me and her current boyfriend. She says, I've been through a lot, and this is why she stays on her Finsta page.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, so she also revealed she had a Finsta page.
Yeah, she did.
Listen, even now I'll talk to guys about it and they'll be like, that's weird. Like, yeah, maybe he is gay. And I think that women perpetuate it and guys do.
Oh, that's the thing. Men, we already know that men perpetuate that. If you're not a certain way, they're the reasons, to be honest, cis-hetero men are the reasons why a lot of people sometimes do feel uncomfortable with coming out, and because there's this stigma around it because of what society has taught them, that boys are supposed to be a certain way and women are supposed to be a certain way. And so it's a very toxic thing. But just let people do what they want to do. If they want to be queer, let them be queer.
Or not have a lot of sex. That's on them. It's it's boring.
Maybe something wrong with you. That's why they don't want to have
me?
Sex. No,
something's
not you.
Me?
Not you specifically. Like, just in general.
Oh, you're like, maybe there's the women want to have too much sex, the guys don't.
Yeah.
That happens. Whatever you want to do, find the person to do with. Okay.
I really wanted to get into this next story of Bridget Nielsen saying she slapped Madonna. Oh, yeah. Okay, so maybe we can do it a part of What's Trending Top of the Hour of the
News.
Yeah,
let's add that to
it. We can play that. We can play it in the next hour coming right up. Honey, if you want to find out more entertainment stories, head over to WeAreChannelQ.com and make sure to keep us favorited on that radio.com app.
Well, yeah, as you mentioned, we've got What's Trending the News Top of the Hour coming up. A student who attended San Diego University has died, and the school is blaming the fraternity. So will other schools jump on the anti-frat bandwagon? That's coming up next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Well, we are back with What's Trending in the News, top of the hour. There is a viral video that's been circulating around, and it includes a gay teenager, Jordan Steffi, who's getting a lot of support from LGBTQ Twitter. The video shows him punching out a boy he described as a homophobic bully. Now, Steffi is a junior at LaPorte High School in LaPorte, Indiana. He said the other boy had posted a hateful message about him on Snapchat. And this is what he told a news site. He made an anti-gay post with a picture of me on it saying how he hated gays and a bunch of throwing up emojis all over it. So he walked up to him and said, why did you post this? And the person says it was just a post. Well, it's not just a post. It's about me saying how you dislike who I am. This comes from Jordan Steffi. And I don't appreciate that. Then this bully goes, okay, but what are you going to do about it? I'm not going to deal with this. This is the last time I'm called to anything. And then he said, what are you going to do about it? And he used the F word. That's when
Steffi
says, that he ended up punching the guy.
Oh, yes, he did what he had to do, honey. Yeah. And I don't condone violence, but this boy, you know what? I remember being in high school and seeing some, like, seeing people get bullied, and especially queer people get bullied. And, you know, for me, I personally, I've never experienced that, but I often look back at my time in high school and even in middle school, and I often wish that I would have stood up for those people, especially when I knew I was kind of dealing with my own, you know, feelings. And it takes a lot for someone to stand up to their bully, and for also to be thinking, to think like these bullies that feel like, oh, because you're gay, you don't know how to fight. Because you're a dude, you don't know how to handle yourself. Well, Jordy Steffy showed him something else, honey.
Well, we don't obviously promote any sort of being like any sort of being physical.
Girl,
we don't think that's good.
I do promote this right here, though. I promote standing up for yourself.
Well,
because
he
he
expresses regret for using physical force. He said, if I could take it back personally, I would, but I'm glad I stood up for myself. If you were in my shoes, you'd probably get sick of it, and you'd want to stand up for yourself.
For sure.
And now the comments on Twitter are very positive. Miss Coco Peru said, I'm sorry you had to go there, but I love that you stood your ground. Keep being you. Then this other person said, I'm glad this kid had the courage to defend himself and didn't become another statistic lost to bullying.
Exactly.
Because, of course, we know what happens when people are bullied and don't
Channing
say
Smith,
anything.
Janelle Miles.
And remain silent. Gay Demon on Twitter said, okay, said, Jordan Steffy had been called an F word one too many times. And it was done. This time, Jordan not only clapped back, but slapped back.
And this is actually a really good segue into what we're going to be talking about later on the show, kind of about, you know, anti-bullying. Is it actually, you know, these anti-bully trainings that kids and schools are doing now, is it actually enough to save LGBTQ youth and students? And, you know, in these cases, is it even helping? Because you're still seeing these things happen on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And like I just said, Channing Smith, who was that boy in Tennessee who committed a completed suicide and because of bullying and cyberbullying, it's tough, you know?
It's not going away,
It's not going away.
Let's move on to the anonymous book. The anonymous senior administration official. We're not talking about anonymous like the known person with the masks, by the way. You know that anonymous? The anonymous mask person.
I don't know who that is.
Or like on sites like where Anonymous reveals things. This is an anonymous senior administration official who wrote a New York Times op-ed critical of President Trump last year.
I know about this.
All right. So in a new book, this person says that the president repeatedly proposed getting rid of judges. So in the book, it says the president has proposed doing away with judges on more than one occasion and that Trump said too many of his policies were getting stuck in legal limbo. Damn that legal limbo, right? The author writes, can we just get rid of the judges? Let's get rid of the effing judges. That comes from Trump. There shouldn't be any at all, really. Then this person continues, he went a step further and asked his legal team to draft up a bill and send it to Congress to reduce the number of federal judges. Staff ignored the outburst and the wacky request. Trump has come back against this book, of course, saying the coward who wrote this book didn't put their name on it because it is nothing but lies. Real authors reach out to their subjects to get things fact-checked, but this person is in hiding, making that very basic part of being a real writer impossible. That's from the White House, who said that in a statement. It seems like just Trump wrote that. The anonymous author, of course, did that op-ed in September 2018. He talked... I keep saying he. It could be they. Who knows? They talked about coordinated efforts from the president's staff to stop Trump's worst instincts and specifically use the word thwart. The author's new book, A Warning, is scheduled to be released next week. Should be interesting.
Yeah.
Do you think you would pick it up?
Yeah, especially spilling a whole bunch of tea. You know I love tea.
Yeah.
But I do. I
wonder if we could do some. We should get someone to be on the show to talk about it. Obviously, it can't be anonymous, this anonymous person.
Yeah, they're anonymous for a reason because they're kind of being an inside
person.
Can
we get them to interview and like call in with that, like mess up their voice?
Like, hey. I mean, maybe. I would like it. Maybe we should just be. Maybe it's me.
Yeah.
How do you know it's not me?
Wow.
You're just really discrediting my work.
So you're pretending that you've made no money.
Period. That's it.
Okay, let's move on to the story coming out of San Diego. It's really sad. 19-year-old freshman has died in a hospital after he was found unresponsive by fellow students in the dorms at San Diego State University. The president confirmed the death of this 19-year-old Dylan Hernandez of Jacksonville, Florida, in an email to the university community yesterday, saying, "It is with a heavy heart that I'm writing to say that Dylan Hernandez, the student who was hospitalized last week, has passed away. His family gave their goodbyes last Sunday night." Now, police have launched an investigation into the event surrounding Hernandez's death after a 911 call was made from his residence on the morning of November 7th, he lived on the sixth floor of this residence hall, was a freshman pledge in the Phi Gamma Delta, or this Fiji fraternity. And they talked about, in the wake of the investigation, they announced actually, and this is a big deal, the suspension of all 14 IFC-related fraternity chapters, and it affects 1,400 fraternity members. Now, friends of the Hernandez family have also established a GoFundMe page to accept donations, and the university asks all to respect the privacy of the family, but I think it is interesting, the whole frat-related thing, and how could this be the end, or could other universities question their fraternities? Because so many things that are questionable happens at frats, including people that, might party and do bad things. And
I mean, this has been something
threaten their lives.
Fraternity culture and sorority culture has been something that is was one ingrained in my entire experience. So, yeah, I do think there needs to be a change.
All right, that was some What's Trending in the News, top of the hour. Coming up, Donald Trump Jr. is continuing his latest book tour. We'll be talking about the surprising protest that unraveled at his recent stop. And this time it wasn't the left who was triggered by his antics.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Now, Donald Trump Jr. is on his book tour promoting his new book, Triggered, How the Left Thrives on Hate and Wants to Silence Us. Well, recently he was at UCLA right here in Los Angeles, California, Westwood to be exact. And he had protesters, of course, the usual ones that you would suspect. But he had a group of protesters that came up who weren't the ones that you would typically expect to be protesting the Trump family. These protesters were dressed in MAGA caps and other pro-Trump attire, and we're going to get into who this group is and what they are, because it's a very interesting crowd, quote-unquote interesting crowd.
I mean, I actually really enjoy this because, you know, Donald Trump Jr., he has been, like you said, going on this book tour. He was on The View. He's been on CBS This Morning. Being embarrassed on these platforms by journalists that are shutting him down and shutting down his lies. And, you know, his girlfriend, and also, I believe,
Kimberly Guilfoyle.
Yeah, she's the campaign advisor or something.
She was a Fox News anchor before.
But now she's actually working with the Trump administration and the campaign happening. Yeah, she's kind of become his watchdog in some ways.
It's like they swap. Like, people that work at the administration work at Fox News. People that work at Fox end up working at the administration.
Well, yeah, because Trump likes to keep yes people around him, and so they've been going on different platforms and different shows to basically lie and say that, woe is me, we're triggering Americans and we're triggering liberals, and this really shows that, you know, I think there's a tide kind of turn where there are people that are quote-unquote Trump supporters that are no longer fans of them.
It's not just the left that is being triggered. So after this presentation, they announced that there would be no Q&A session. And Chance turned from promoting America to not really promoting it.
The furthest leftist on a college campus. Right? It doesn't happen that way. We're willing to listen.
Q&A!
We're willing to listen.
So it basically went from USA, USA to Q&A, which I actually think is pretty cute. Pretty cute transition. But it wasn't as cute. If you get to know the group behind this, it wasn't so cute.
Well, the chant started because, you know, like you heard, you know, Donald Trump Jr. saying they don't want to do this whole, the Q&A. They don't want to answer questions. And people are like, well, why are you here then? Why are you just, you know, doing another stop on your book tour and you're not actually going to hear what we have to say, especially if you're Donald Trump's son and this could potentially go back to the campaign and hearing what, you know, Donald Trump wants from, you know, needs to hear from his supporters. So it this is just a mess. And I know Donald Trump, we talked about, you know, the kids that are trying to kind of impress their daddy in some ways. And Donald Trump Jr. is at the lowest of the totem pole at this point.
Oh, well, I feel like he's impressing him. You don't think he's at the top? Like if it was
no, he's not. He's
Succession,
been going around,
he'd be the favorite.
He's been going around making a fool of himself.
Well, this is what he said about not answering the question. He goes, the reason oftentimes it doesn't make sense is because we're not willing, they don't want people to hijack it with nonsense, looking to go for some sort of soundbite. You have people spreading nonsense, spreading hate, trying to take over the room. Well, the people in this case taking over the room, and we wanted to talk about this group of people, it's an alt-right group of what they're calling dissident right activists. They've joined forces, though, with neo-Nazis and others on the far-right fringes to attack conservatives. This is an alt-right group attacking conservatives. They call themselves the Groyper Army. And they're basically against conservatives that create an agenda or a platform for more progressive things. So anyone who they may have gay speakers, or they might promote things like diversity or things that I guess they would align with more progressives. There are conservatives obviously out there that promote those things as well, but this Groyper Army is basically they are racist and they are neo-Nazis.
Well, yeah, so they're not connected into, you know how I always say, I feel like I say this all the time, you know, there's a difference between Republicans and conservatives and
then the
Trump extremists. Yeah. And, you know, Trump has created his own little group of people that we see at these rallies, that we see, you know, spewing this white nationalist and white supremacy narrative and rhetoric across, you know, social media. These are the people that, you know, are thinking that, hey, it needs to be this way. There should be only people that only care about this. And they're kind of calling out conservatives that are still able, kind of like the Ben Shapiro's. Basically, this alt-right group that we're talking about is a huge fans of Ben Shapiro's, who is this guy that you'll hear talking about, you know, well, the latest thing that we talked about him was when Beto O'Rourke was like saying he's going to come in and take your guns. He was like, well, I'm going to meet you at my front door with my gun. And so they do some really extremist things and have some really extremist rhetoric. That's what they like to follow in some ways.
I mean,
it's very scary.
They're Holocaust deniers.
Yes.
They will talk about the man who perpetrated the Christchurch mass shooting. And they have all these anti-Semitic conspiracy theories and white genocide fears. So this is a really horrible group. But these are the people that are coming out and saying that they're pro-Trump, but against, if anything, against Trump. It's strange.
I think they're saying if Trump doesn't go even more extreme, then they're going to, like, they're probably going to lose his support. And honestly, I'm kind of down for that. You know, if they're not okay with what Trump is doing, and even though Trump is very extreme, then maybe they won't re-vote him into the White House. Maybe we have less to worry about.
True.
I don't know. Maybe this is a good thing that he's losing these, you know, supporters, and Donald Trump Jr. is getting embarrassed everywhere. It's my favorite thing, honestly.
These are the followers to be embarrassed by.
It's kind of like Christmas comes early.
Okay. Well, speaking about bullies, because that group are a bunch of bullies, is anti-bullying training enough to keep LGBTQ students safe? We talked a bit about this earlier in the show, but we'll be getting more into it right after this.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Tyler Clementi's death in 2011 after being outed by his college roommate pressured New Jersey to pass the anti-bullying Bill of Rights. So while all 50 states have passed anti-bullying laws in the past decade because of course, growing concerns over cyberbullying, New Jersey's is actually still among the strongest. But with more millennials dying by suicide and those who identify as LGBTQ, that statistic has risen. Are these current laws enough to protect young people this day and age? We are asking that question today, and hopefully we'll have some answers. We have Daniel Sonati joining us, who's an associate professor at New York Institute of Technology and is the director of counseling programs. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So in this article that inspired us to have this conversation, you talk about the definition of bullying and how it has changed over time. Can you explain that?
Sure. So one thing to know is that all 50 states have a law now, but the definition of the word bullying is different in every state.
Oh.
And so I find that a lot of parents and kids especially don't know that there's a law about bullying and definitely aren't clear about the definition. So some of the things that have been added over the years are the fact that something doesn't have to be repeated necessarily. It could be a one-time thing, mm-hmm. like name-calling or slurs or even like drawings and artwork. And they don't necessarily have to be intended to harm anymore. So those are some of the things that are different.
And kids who do this, they would get into trouble or they can be fined. Like, what happens if someone gets found out for bullying or gets discovered or it happens in front of everyone?
Yeah, so there are supposed to be consequences, but that's going to depend on the school and the culture of the school. So some schools are still relying on punishment, like after-school detention and suspension. And others have moved on to things like restorative justice practices, where they're asked, they'll ask the student to do something to make it up to the students that they bullied. So it really depends on the school and the culture.
So, you know, oftentimes people think bullying includes, you know, physically or mentally harassing someone. But what are some of the less obvious signs of bullying?
Yeah, I mean, so what we commonly call microaggressions. So they may not even be intended to harm, but because you're just not up to speed on things or aware of some things that may be hurtful. You know, comments that are jokes to you are intended to be jokes, but end up being harmful or hurtful to the person they're directed towards, those types of things. And when it comes to transgender students, definitely lately, name changes and pronoun changes and whether or not the school supports it, but the individual teachers get those changes right. So
those are some of the things. That is something that I wanted to specifically bring up because there's implicit biases. And it's oftentimes, you know, how can schools go about making sure that every teacher and their, like, you know, the administration is actually well-informed and just has a lot of knowledge when it comes to LGBTQ youth and students and dealing with them?
Yeah. I mean, it starts from the tops. You're right. So the principals, the vice principals, they have to not only be knowledgeable, but supportive. And then beyond that, there are people who are just by the nature of who they are, like counselors and social workers and school psychologists, should be really supportive and knowledgeable and do training within the school for teachers. But again, it really depends on the culture of the school. Some principals are very good and very supportive, while others just kind of turn a blind eye.
That's so dangerous.
Yeah, it's really interesting because we're seeing all these new stats and data come out of an increase in suicide and bullying, and yet all these programs have been implemented. So what's happening in the gap? Why is there still such a disconnect?
Mm-hmm. A lot of things that probably need to be put in place. First of all, these are all unfunded mandates, so it's not as if the schools are receiving any money to do any of this. But beyond that, it really depends on who is picking up the responsibility for doing that. There's something in New Jersey called an anti-bullying specialist. It's supposed to be somebody in every school. And it's usually somebody like a counselor or a social worker. And they're supposed to put in place programs like throughout the year to aimed at sort of improving the culture of the school. But I find in some schools they haven't even named that specialist.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah.
Should
really
find or something school. Like a school should if that's in place, then like there should be something if they don't do it.
Yeah.
It happens.
And that kind of brings me to my next question, which we're going to go to a quick little break because it's been nearly a decade since we've, you know, been promising, you know, LGBTQ youth and just people in general that it will get better. But how do we continue to actually keep that promise? Because we've seen Channing Smith out of Tennessee and Jamel Miles, who was just 9 years old when he completed suicide. So we're going to be right back. And we're going to continue discussing this much-needed conversation.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
We are back talking to Daniel Sinodi, who's an associate professor at New York Institute of Technology and director of counseling programs. Thanks for being here.
Of course.
And now we're referencing your article. The headline was, "Is anti-bullying training enough to keep LGBTQ students safe?" You mentioned how schools aren't implementing the things that could work. So what needs to happen, and does it need to happen outside of the schools at this point?
Yeah, so some schools are doing a great job, so I need to say that. And in general, the amount of bullying of LGBTQ kids has gone down over the times that we've had anti-bullying trainings. But yes, some schools are definitely not doing what they're supposed to be doing. So some states have actually talked about instituting fines. I know you mentioned that before, but to parents if bullying continues for their kids. No state has done that yet, but there's been some talk about that. Really, the only times that anybody gets in trouble and there's any accountability is when there's a tragedy, like some of the ones that we mentioned before. And when somebody either completes suicide or attempts suicide, or it blows up into a crime. So, unfortunately, there's not enough accountability yet.
See, and that's interesting that you bring up the parents angle, because I know you were on your article. It says adults who fail to take action when they witness bullying or even model intolerant behaviors themselves send signals to their students without even realizing it. You know, what do parents have to do? Should they jump into this before this even occurs, especially if their child is coming home saying something is going wrong? Should they be banding together, like with PTA associations, to make sure this stops? What can parents be doing?
Well, the first thing I think is educating themselves on what the law is, the definition of bullying, and, you know, what are some of the things that are in place. And then, yeah, definitely any school that has parents that hold the staff within the school accountable is probably more likely to have a culture in which bullying is not acceptable. So parents play a really big role.
Yeah, and I was going to say, like, because you're a professional around this, what's the difference between there being a real problem and kids just being kids?
Yeah, so there are specific things that are off limits now, what we call protected characteristics, you know, like race and religion and gender identity, sexual orientation, and so on, right? So to use that against another person to make them feel bad is, even one time, you know, considered to be bullying. You can't call people racial slurs or homophobic names or anything like that anymore. But some of the things that are, like, traditionally considered like harassing type things that are repeated, those can still be considered bullying as well. It's up to the schools to really decide how it's affecting the student who's being targeted. And that's really the key. If it's a hostile environment for them, like if they don't want to come to school or they avoid certain parts of the school or certain people, then that's a problem.
And I was going to say, since, you know, obviously what you're doing with teachers and in schools is great. We just heard what the adults and parents might have to do, like a fine. What about training kids where as peers they are supporting each other? Because it seems like a lot happens behind the scenes or through social media that parents and the school might not know about, which leads to a lot of this bad stuff.
Yeah, a lot of schools have great peer leadership programs or peer mediation even. But, some schools don't take advantage of that. I think there are a lot of evidence-based programs that are tried before, and there's data to say that they work. Having a gay-straight alliance or an LGBTQ club is a huge difference in those schools. Any sort of peer programs are great too, but of course the kids have to be trained by somebody, maybe a school counselor or an administrator.
So with you training a lot of different schools and inserting these programs into these schools, is there anything that you've noticed that you want to train even further on and making sure that people understand how important this is?
Yeah, if I had more time, and I have 3 hours with the people that I train, but it's not nearly enough.
Oh, yeah,
because
sure.
By the time I get into what is bullying and what is not bullying, we really need to get into like people's biases and their, you know, understanding of differences between, like, let's say terminology, like the difference between gender identity and sexual orientation, which sometimes people think are the same thing.
Right.
And I'm really... Yeah.
That's interesting. And mediation. I mean, like, that is something you don't just learn in a few hours. Knowing how to talk to someone about these hard issues.
Well, I know some schools, they have those days where teachers actually take courses and things like that, where kids get to stay home and teachers actually have those teacher days where they get to do trainings and things like that. Maybe they should be doing this with this type of training, where teachers take a full day to understand, like, hey, we're going to go through this training and understand what we need to be doing to change this. Especially if the school has experienced a tragedy.
Yeah, you would hope, for sure.
So I guess I feel like this has been very dim. Like, is there a silver lining or like a takeaway?
I'm sorry, I apologize.
No, I feel like there's a lot of work that needs to be done.
There is a lot more work that needs to be done, for sure. But like I said, since anti-bullying laws have been instituted, which again is only 9 years, so it's relatively new, the amount of bullying has gone down, especially of LGBTQ kids. So that's great. And there are some schools in which they have these real great positive cultures and everybody is happy and it's an inclusive environment. It's just those schools that are not really taking it seriously that really need to be reached.
All right.
Well thank you for the work that you're doing, because you're the reason why some of these schools are moving forward in a very positive way, and what you're doing will continue to shift that.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right. Well, Daniel Sanotti, again, is Associate Professor at New York Institute of Technology and Director of Counseling Programs. Thanks for being here.
Thanks.
Okay, we're moving into what's trending, top of the hour coming up. Details on the gay-themed Valentine's Day movie we've all been waiting for. That's next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
It's time for what's trending in the news right now, top of the hour. A queer holiday love story is on its way. Yeah, free
for all.
No,
I'm just joking. Well, everyone was like, my initial reaction was to be like, ew. No.
That's because you're just scared of love, Ryan.
No, I hate it. It's non-existent.
Freeform is bringing us The Thing About Harry, a gay-themed Valentine's Day romance directed by Good Trouble and The Foster's creator, Peter Page. And it's premiering on the network in February. And it's starring one of your favorites from Grey's Anatomy, Jake Borelli.
Yes, you know he's a friend of Let's Go There. We love him here. We love him here. So maybe he'll come back and promote it.
Yeah, that'd be fun. He stars as Sam, a gay man who embarks on a road trip from Chicago to attend an engagement party in his small hometown in Missouri, where he faced bullying for bravely coming out during high school. Here's the twist. He ends up having to take the trip with his high school nemesis, Harry, a jock who may be on the road to some self-discovery.
Ooh, that's a Harry situation.
Now, the executive producers shared, true equality can only be achieved when you see yourself reflected in the movies, music, and stories that paint our culture. As young gay men in the 90s, whenever a rom-com opened, we would watch the leading lady fall in love and imagine what it would be like if the boy was saying all those things to another boy. Mm. We've always wanted to make a movie, an unabashedly romantic comedy that queer boys wouldn't have to translate. It's rewarding to take the genre to a new, all-inclusive level. Definitely going to need to have him on for that.
I'm excited for that. He'll come by. He'll stop by. He's amazing.
I love a good rom-com, you know. All right, let's move on to this story about Madonna.
Yes. Okay, so y'all know I teased it in What's the Tea. We didn't get to touch on it. But you remember yesterday how we were talking about Madonna and, you know, a fan was suing her because she pushed it back, blah, blah, blah. Well, arch nemesis, who I didn't even know was a thing, Brigitte Nielsen.
Well, I feel like Brigitte Nielsen is an arch nemesis to everyone.
First of all, I love her. Maybe that's the reason why I like her so much. Because everyone hates her and she hates everyone. It's kind of my thing. Well, she was on the talk on Monday, where she was basically asked about the whole situation and the tardiness, and she started automatically going into the spill about, you know, Madonna's not a queen. She should never think that she was a queen. And then she told this hilarious story about the time that she slapped her in the face and then slept with Madonna's then husband, Sean Penn. Here's the clip.
A couple of months later in the south of France, uh-huh. I got back at her for being rude, having a one-night stand with Sean Penn.
Get old, you can just share all your slutty stories and be so, and have like a whole audience. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. Okay, so before this,
I mean, props. Although Sean Penn is a bit of a douche. Okay.
So here's the slapping story. So basically, in 1987, this is what Brigitte is saying. She was at a club downtown with her, and basically Madonna kept stepping on her feet. And you know, Brigitte is like 6 feet. She is a tall woman.
She's a big woman.
Honey, she is large and in charge. Well, she goes on to say she was very rude, and ended up giving her a slap across the face. And so I guess since then they were never really friends. She was like, she's just never been polite for me, and then ended up being tossed out by Madonna's bouncers. And so she was like, okay, well, I'm gonna get revenge on Madonna. And that's when she was talking about, well, she saw, you know, Sean Penn in the south of France, and they ended up having a one-night stand. So basically she was a Jezebel. And I love it.
I I feel like you love it now that it's in the past. Well, but you would think otherwise of it if she was with someone else's man.
I don't know. You know, if the rumors were true and Madonna was being a little messy little one and being rude and stuff, maybe she kind of deserved it.
Also, it's okay to be with someone's person.
Now, if you really want to get down to it, we can have discussions here. I don't know. She want to open up a can of worms.
No. I'll be back. I'll make my revenge. We'll come back in 20 years on the future view.
Luckily, I like men, and the men that like me are gay, so Sheer don't have a chance.
They might be open. Who knows?
Lies.
Okay. Well, coming up, does moving in with your partner lower your sex drive? We'll be getting into that with a sex and relationship therapist after this.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Okay, in our latest discovery of interesting advice column questions, we're taking you down the journey of this one involving a couple who met 6 years ago. And in this advice column, this person says, whenever we met, we would have long 5-hour sessions where we explored each other's fantasies and kinks in a way I thought was impossible. Have amazing sex whenever we saw each other. She tried to break things off with me about a year ago and confessed that she was in love with me. I'd been trying to get up the courage to tell her the same thing, and we got together for real. This is when things changed, though. She moved in with me 9 months ago, and that's when the problem started. I just don't want to have sex with her anymore. Actually, I lost the urge around the time we became official, and I have no idea why.
Oh, this boy has problems. So,
and then he continues, I love Gwen, and I want to spend the rest of my life with her, but I know this isn't sustainable. What should I do to make myself want to sleep with Gwen again?
First of all, if he don't want to sleep with, like, naturally sleep with him, then he can get on out. Like, I'm not about to force no man to sleep with
exactly.
me. Exactly. Like, trash.
So we're about to bring in an expert, but before we do, and as we're talking about this, we want to hear from you. You can respond to our poll on social media. We ask, can moving in with your partner make your sex life worse or better? We'll be revealing the poll numbers in a bit. Or you can give us a call at any point to give us your take.
We got 821 votes, by the way.
Yo, we're going viral.
Boom.
833-77-CULT-Q is our number. 833-772-2557. Can moving in with your partner make your sex life worse or better? And now Stephanie is with us, who's a sex and relationship therapist. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Okay.
Stephanie, please tell us that this man is something wrong with him.
Okay. So I'm not going to say wrong, but what I will say is that this is rooted in chemistry and in biology.
Oh, science.
Can you explain?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we meet somebody new, when we're in that sort of new relationship phase, our brain releases oxytocin, which is called the cuddle hormone. It's literally the chemical that our brain uses to help us bond. Moms and babies release it when babies are born. And new couples release it when they first start dating. So when you first meet, your body is flooded with oxytocin. You are literally physiologically bonding with this person, but that's amazing. And it's like sugar or alcohol or caffeine. It's only sustainable for so long. Eventually, your body goes back to kind of its normal state. And we feel that as an emotional change.
So are you just describing being horny?
No, I'm describing being in love.
Or infatuated.
Well, because here's the thing. The reason why I asked this is because it seems like, you know, there may be a connection, a disconnect when, you know, obviously the chemistry of just meeting someone, you're feeling it like, oh my God, I'm so attracted and I've explored so much with this person before making it official. But then maybe there's a disconnect when it's like, oh, maybe there's a problem with intimacy and kind of saying, oh, there's something official here.
Well, commitment.
Commitment.
Issues.
That's the word I was looking for. So how do you know the balance between that?
So for some people, it's a commitment thing, but it's also often a behavioral thing. Think about going to Vegas for the weekend and playing the slot machines. There's this thing called intermittent reinforcement. We never know when it's going to hit. We never know when the lights and bells and sirens are going to go off. And so that keeps us pulling that lever. In the same way, when we first start dating somebody before we've moved in with them, we don't necessarily see them on a consistent basis. We don't necessarily know when we're going to have sex or make out or even cuddle. And so our brain goes into that sort of gambling mode that next time it's going to be amazing. Next time it's going to be amazing. Ooh, how long is it going to be before I get to be with this person again? And then we commit. And then we move in together. And now our brain doesn't get that intermittent reinforcement because we're together all the time. And our brain goes, wait, this is boring. I know what to expect now.
So what's how do we get into a healthy behavior here? Because it seems like, and I've met people like this. Recently, I've actually met a lot of people where they're in these relationships and live in, they love their significant other. And I was in one of those. But like, shut up. But no, the thing is, I also feel like I wonder if there's a shift of intimacy, like prioritizing intimacy, and some people just like have it and it's something that they want to work on day to day, and some people just don't look at it as something that they need to work on.
Yeah, absolutely. People don't realize that physical connection is as important as making time to pay the bills together, or making time to go to the PTA meeting, or doing the dishes. When we move out of that infatuation stage, when our oxytocin levels settle down, when we're no longer getting that, when will I get to see them next energy, it becomes routine, it becomes mundane. And we often back burner sex and intimacy because there are, we think, more important things to do. So one of the things that I work with my couples on is making a commitment to being together, planning out date nights, making sure that you are prioritizing sex, you are prioritizing touch as much as you are food and laundry and carpool and everything else.
And I mean, is it also that, and for a guy, this is a bit of a gender thing, like a guy seeing a girl, like not putting herself together as consistently, you kind of like lose that allure.
That's what I was sitting here thinking, like, yeah, you start to see the real person, and it's like oh,
going to the bathroom, doing number two, farting.
They didn't wash their hands after they left the bathroom. That's nasty. I don't want her touching me.
Yeah, absolutely. There's this idea of new relationship energy where, you know, the new partner has like this sort of halo glow and everything they do is sexy and all of their quirks and foibles are adorable. And then it becomes something we deal with every day and the quirks become annoying and the sexy goes away because nobody can maintain sexy 24/7. And so there is absolutely an element of that. But that's where making that conscious choice to cultivate that intimacy, to maintain a certain degree of mystery, and to prioritize your coupledom as much as everything else becomes important.
Well, Stephanie, I just want to say that I do have the sexy every day. So,
I was going to say I have the sexy.
I
have no doubt.
You know. Okay, well, yeah, we asked you on social media, can moving in with your partner make your sex life worse or better? You can still answer our poll. The polls are open. And also give us a call to give us your take, 833-772-2557.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
We are back asking you, can moving in with your partner make your sex life worse and or better? Oh, I said and better.
And better.
All at the same time. Wow. And with us to give us some insights.
Sex can be complicated. On this.
Oh, yeah. Stephanie Gorlick, sex and relationship therapist. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so the polls have spoken.
Yes, so you know how we do it here on Let's Go There, Stephanie. I like to put it out there. I like to have everyone guess which one they think is succeeding more. Is it worse or better? Everyone, are we ready? Shira,
yes.
What are your thoughts?
Is it worse or better?
Do you think people,
I think
more
most
people think
people
it's worse?
Get worse because no one understands and has the self-awareness to put in the work when you have someone in your life like that.
Okay, producer Vanessa, what do you think?
I agree. It has to get worse. So no one. So what I'm learning is just don't get together.
No, I don't know what I want to say. Okay. People are scared of intimacy, and they won't put in the work, and actually could get better if they gave it the time.
Okay, let's have our expert, our sex and relationship expert, Stephanie. What do you think? Do you think people voted worse or better?
You know, I think in your poll, people are going to say things get worse because that's what I see in my practice every day.
Ooh.
So what, right, why are people putting themselves to this? Like, what is going on? I know that it's not as exciting as the first time, but like, what is wrong with all
it
of us?
It should always be exciting
I
the first time.
It can be, or am I just an idealist?
Are people?
No,
yeah,
it absolutely can be. The best sex is continually creative.
Yes.
You're always thinking of new ways to be a little bit selfish, be a little bit dirty, be a little bit connected. Mm. And if you are, like you guys said, putting in that work, then sex and the relationship can continually grow and improve and get better and better. I just don't know that a lot of people have the tools necessary to do that without really diving into what does it mean to be in a relationship.
Do you think people are afraid to have those conversations to say, this is what turns me on, this is what I want to try? Do you feel like there's people are kind of walking on eggshells?
Absolutely. I think people are afraid of being judged. I think that often we're scared to tell our partners what we want or what we're curious about. The curiosity is really a big one I see in my practice. Everybody's comfortable with missionary, but when we start thinking outside the box, we start to get scared that our partner's going to judge us.
Also, I want to know, like, do you find this is happening where partners are not coming in with the same type of libido, but then they like ignore the fact and they think it won't matter, but it ends up impacting things greatly?
Yes, I deal with a lot of couples that have mismatched libido. But what a lot of people don't understand is that sex is something that the more you do it, the more you want it. So for a lot of my lower libido partners, I encourage them to say yes, even if they're not feeling the yes in the moment. Oh. Now, that does not mean coercion. That does not mean guilt-tripping.
Okay, thank you, Stephanie. Thank you.
Clarify, please.
It's a matter of a headache. Make the effort, because your brain will do a lot of that. You'll get that oxytocin hit. You'll get some of what used to make sex insanely awesome. But if you don't do it, you tend to lose it.
Yeah, you know what? Also, I'll say from a female perspective, like, guys should do a bit more like the what's it called? Foreplay happens before being in bed. And if they don't know how to do that, and then they're just like, yeah, let's do it. If you know, you need to get worked up a bit. You got to do some work.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that I find myself telling almost all of the husbands that I work with is that kindness is a form of foreplay. a kind word, a compliment, doing the laundry so that your partner doesn't have to. All of that is foreplay, but we don't often think about it that way.
And then doing it on the laundry.
Washer
dryer.
Now I got to wash the... next time I try to do laundry, I'm going to wash it off.
Oh, don't worry. It's been pretty
chill. I want to get to the results. Here we go. You ready?
Yes. So, what does the poll say?
Actually, everyone voted sex gets better.
What?
When you move in with your partner.
I'm surprised.
57% of people out of 859 votes said better, and 43% said worse.
Well, so it's pretty close.
So maybe you just got some freaky followers over at We Are
Channel
Q.
Thanks. And any responses? Any good responses?
Are you shocked, Stephanie?
You know what? I am so proud right now. That is my first reaction. It's that clearly your audience are amazing. And what I would love to see is for that 53 to reach out to the things have gotten worse, and offer some tips, offer some stories, offer some feedback. I mean, you have the poll going, you have comments open. Turn that into the majority of us are rocking our sex lives. Let us show you how to do it.
Let's inspire others the way we need to inspire them. Okay, Stephanie Gorelick, thank you again for being with us. Are you on Instagram? Where can people follow you?
I'm on Twitter, and also my website is boundtogethercounseling.com.
Bound Together Counseling. Great. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much. Bye, guys.
All right. Bye. Now we're getting to our Yaz Queen of the Day. Don't go anywhere.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Okay, as we wrap up the show, we're doing our Yaz Queen of the Day.
Yaz Queen.
This one goes out. Wow.
I'm sorry.
Some like a lot of strength was used for that one.
Yes, queen.
This one goes out to MJ Rodriguez from Pose, of course, who has now gotten her first beauty campaign. She announced a partnership with Olay Body as one of the label's brand ambassadors. MJ shared on social media, "This is officially my first ever beauty campaign. I am so thankful to have the opportunity to show other trans women of color everywhere that they are seen and that they are worthy."
I love Olay's lotion.
Oh, really?
Olay has very, very
I
good
need
lotion.
To, I some good lotion.
Raised on
I need
that
some
lotion.
New lotion. The actress joins other trans women of color like Laverne Cox, who have also worked with the brand. She also added this, as a woman, as a black or Latina or trans woman, we have to constantly give words of affirmation to ourselves. It's just hard for us. I'm just focusing on amplifying my voice, trying to get it out there as much as possible. I wonder if we're going to see her and the Posecast at Trevor Live this weekend.
Maybe. You yeah, never know.
I can't
know.
Believe that was basically
and it is this
almost.
Weekend. Oh, my God. Wow. We actually should be talking about that and how.
We will. We're going to have Jason Carter on,
yes,
on
yes,
Friday
yes.
for Action Our Yaz Queen. So stay tuned for that from ET and also from Drag All-Star. No.
Drag Race.
Drag Race.
Wow.
Drag
Race.
Drag me, please.
Which, speaking of, we actually have Gia Gunn joining the show tomorrow.
Ooh.
She'll be in studio with us from Drag Race alum. You know, she's talking about, you know, next week is Trans Awareness Week, and she's coming in a little bit early to talk about that. And she wants to give a little, you know, we don't know, but apparently she may be the new star on the hit show Pose, which, speaking of, so who knows? We never know. A little birdie's telling.
Yeah, we need to get some tea.
She's going to be spilling a whole lot of tea. And I low-key want to talk about, everyone thinks she has terrible attitude, and I can't wait to talk about it.
Okay.
Yeah, she's one of those.
Should not be awkward at all tomorrow.
She's one of those queens that, you know, kind of press the boundaries, and she gets into it with everyone, so I can't wait to kind of dive
she's
in
one of
that.
Those, you know. It's just
but
her
she's
way
really sweet.
Of protecting herself.
She's sweet. In the moments we've met her, she's sweet.
It'll be a therapy moment. And also, some crazy news. Pete Buttigieg seems to be shooting to the top of the 2020 polls.
I'm actually so shocked.
Yeah, so we're going to be getting into...
It's the Iowa polls.
Yeah, we're going to be getting into how that actually happened, because it seems to have happened out of nowhere.
Not saying that he's not deserving, but I'm just shocked. Like, he's really turning things around. And I think at this point, you know, this is a proven fact that it shows that it's anyone's game.
It
is. Anyone could come out of this. So we'll be diving into that a little bit tomorrow.
Yeah, that's on tomorrow's show. Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan, 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on Channel Q. Again, we post all these shows as a podcast. Got to remind people. So just go to our site, wearechannelq.com, for all this podcast. And, of course, wherever podcasts are available. We are sending you love and light.
And, honey, remember to slay.
See you tomorrow. And stay tuned for Loveline with Dr. Chris right after this.
Bye, guys.